This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Robinson Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So businesses in Olympia have been trying to stop an encampment from going up on a city-owned parking lot. And yesterday, they had a win. A temporary restraining order ruled in their favor. They're seeking this because the city of Olympia decided, without any meaningful outreach to the community, to set up this encampment that's going to house between 80 and 120 tents. That's a lot. That's a big deal. And what they're really doing is they're encouraging folks who are currently living out on the streets in Olympia to come at this one area for a mitigation site. So let's say you're now all scattered around. They're saying to at least 80 to 120 people, hey, come here, hang out here. We'll even give you a tent. So in essence, they are attracting even more homeless people who are looking for a free tent, a nice tent, and a place to live where they're not going to be hassled constantly. The problem is you've got a whole bunch of businesses there saying, hey, number one, you didn't follow your own ordinance. You decided to go around the rules that you had set up by simply declaring this an emergency back in July. You're using that as justification for not following your own rules. Number two, we think this is going to become permanent. There's no way in the world you're going to keep this as temporary. And number three, the businesses are saying, hey, we're already dealing with issues concerning our safety for the employees, the safety for our clients and customers, and by the way, property crime that's already happening that you guys aren't addressing, and you're now just bringing more people to this area that impacts us, and you didn't even talk to us. And so a judge said the people who are already there, who have already set up in this encampment, can stay, but no one else can be allowed to join as they figure this out in court. Now, four anonymous businesses sued. The city attorney in Olympia took a swipe at that just the other day. There was a quote in the Tacoma News Tribune. But I'm thinking to myself, of course they want to be anonymous. They don't want to get a whole bunch of hate from people who are going to assume they don't care about the homelessness crisis because they're taking this position. You see, there are a lot of activists out there who don't understand that you can care about the homeless and also disagree with the way they're going about trying to fix this problem. Why might you disagree with people who are going about fixing this problem? Because they've been in charge this entire time and homelessness has gotten worse. In fact, when you look at what's going on right now with this tent encampment or the tiny home villages here in the Seattle area, they're good at one thing, which is getting people off of the streets and into a more sustainable and consistent dwelling, whether we're talking about a tiny home or a tent. They're good at that. What they're not good at is getting these people off of the streets entirely to be self-sustainable. Especially the tent cities are not good at getting people on a path to getting one day out of the tent city. Which is why I generally find myself pushing back somewhat against the tiny home villages. Way more so with these tents, because they don't really do anything to address the problem. And if they did, don't you think the activists would be armed with data showing them that this is actually what happens when you do this? This is what happens when you get involved in one of these tent cities. Look at the statistic. 93% of people get on the right path. 17% of people get back into housing. You don't really hear people making those arguments. There's a reason. It's because they don't have the data to back it up. Now, Jennifer is optimistic about her new home at the mitigation site. Here she is talking with the Tacoma News Tribune.
So I've been all over. I stayed at the Mission. I've stayed at Interfaith. So, yep. I'm glad to see it come together and them all to unify and to do this. Yep. I think this is going to work out. If not good, then better.
Just a quick question. Why does this work, but not the two other places you mentioned sleeping at and staying at and being housed at? Why did those work and all of a sudden this is going to work? Notice she doesn't give you an answer to that because there is no answer. This doesn't get you off the street. So good for the Olympia businesses for fighting back, especially when you've got a city who's unwilling to follow their own rules. For a moment, just imagine this. You don't follow a rule that the Olympia government has in place, that their local council put in place an ordinance that their mayor signed into law. Imagine for a moment not following one of their laws. Find out what happens. They don't give you a pass. They give you a penalty. They hit you with a fee. Ultimately, if they want to, they can throw you in jail. But when it comes to following their own rules, oh, well, I guess it doesn't matter. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
So the viaduct is closing in Seattle completely. There's going to be a time when the tunnel isn't going to be opened in January. I believe it's the second week of January or late in the first week of January. It's going to be closed for about 3 weeks. And it's going to be total chaos. It's going to be total chaos. Moving forward, even when they open the tunnel, it's going to be total chaos for any of you who have to commute into Seattle or out of Seattle or have to pass through Seattle on I-5. The traffic is going to be an utter nightmare, which is exactly how the city of Seattle wants it. If they didn't want it to be that way, they wouldn't have come up with tolling just to drive through Seattle. Remember, you cannot get off the tunnel into downtown Seattle. So anyone who works in Seattle and downtown or the surrounding areas are going to be forced onto I-5 or forced onto service streets. Although you can't take all the service streets because remember, they closed down 3rd for buses and bikes. The SDOT director of downtown mobility, Heather Marks, who shouldn't have a job because there is no mobility in downtown Seattle. I don't know what she's directing. I don't know what she's managing. She tells Cairo 7 that the viaduct closure begins a totally different traffic situation in the city.
I hope it comes as no surprise that the way that we are going to get around in the city of Seattle is about to change significantly.
Now, to be fair to her, it's not going to change significantly in downtown Seattle because the traffic is already a nightmare thanks to the incompetence of SDOT. So it's already nearly impossible to drive around downtown Seattle as it is. Now, it is going to change dramatically on I-5 because as bad as I-5 can be now, in drive times, and even outside of drive times, it's going to be even worse. But now, Lyft and Uber are trying to come to the rescue, but really, they're just taking advantage of this and bringing in more customers. And it's a smart move for them because it builds some brand loyalty. It shows you that they care about the community, but they don't really. They're giving you discounts of $2.75 if you use their services to get to and from a light rail station so that, in theory, rather than driving into downtown Seattle for a job, what you do is, let's say you live in West Seattle or you live in Tukwila, they'll give you this discount if you Uber or ride the bike to the West Seattle Water Taxi, or you do the same thing to the Tukwila Light Rail Station, and then just take light rail into downtown Seattle and then walk to wherever it is you work. So they're thinking that this is somehow going to help. It's not. Here's my prediction. It's not going to help anyone except the people who already do that. The people who already do that are going to take advantage of this deal, which is awesome because then you're going to be an even more loyal supporter of Lyft or of Uber. But it's not going to help anyone else in any meaningful way. The situation is going to suck no matter what it is you do. But it's a good gesture, right? And it wins the brand loyalty. I'm going to offer a gesture to make the traffic a little bit more palatable. Because normally I do about 30 minutes of really good content and then I phone in 2.5 hours of the show. But 30 minutes at any given point, usually in order, are really, really good. I'm going to commit to do 37 minutes of really good content and phone the rest in. So that's an extra 7 minutes of you getting stuck in your commute with really good content from the Jason Rant Show. Because I'm doing my part. Are you? You like that?
Yeah, that's good. Right? Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I'll still mail it in, but you go ahead.
You've been mailing it in since you started. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
So back in August, Alex Randall was pulled over as he was speeding on his motorcycle. He was pulled over by Sergeant Richard Rowe because he decided to speed up dangerously in front of this cop. The cop, however, wasn't in a marked vehicle. He was in civilian clothes. He ends up pulling over this guy, and as he approaches him on the bike, he's got his gun out.
What do you mean, what am I doing?
What are you? Why do you have a gun on me? I'm unarmed. I will pull over. I'm unarmed.
I'm unarmed. So Roe was given a 5-day suspension without pay, but he was not hit with an excessive force claim because he didn't use excessive force. And in the viewpoint of the King County Sheriff's Office, led by Mitzi Johanknik, who cares deeply about officers and has their back, she said, hey, we don't view We don't have a policy that specifically views holding a weapon pointed at the person or not as use of force when there's no force used. So they didn't fire the guy. They made him go through additional training. Well, the county was sued, and they just settled for $65,000. So the speeder, Alex Randall, gets a paycheck of $65,000. Plus, the King County Sheriff's Office is going to update their policies on use of force. And I believe they're also going to have to do some additional training for everybody. So they're going to update the training across the board that says, hey, if you're in situations like this, don't do it this way, do it another way. And they'll presumably explain what that other way is. And I'm going to guess that the other way means don't pull out your gun on the dork who decided to ride his little moped a little bit too fast. I know that it was a motorcycle, but I don't like the guy. He did an interview after a press conference about a month and a half ago. He just seems like an entitled, I can't say the word I'm thinking of because it's against brand, but an entitled loser. How about that?
That's I'll just fine, go I guess.
I mean, you want me to tell you what I was really thinking?
No, I got
You knew what I was thinking. Which is funny because I think you and I didn't tell you what I thought of this guy beforehand. But we both saw the same audio. We both agree he's that word I can't say on the radio, but we'll substitute loser for
him. I mean, I wouldn't make fun of him for saying, I'm unarmed, I'm unarmed.
Ooh, I'm so scared.
Like,
I'm
I think
unarmed.
He reacted appropriately to having a gun pointed.
Ooh, I'm terrified. Big baby. Just a gun. I'm kidding. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you my latest blog, where State Representative Matt Manweller calls out the Seattle Times as a prom queen jilted on dance night, all because they're upset that he didn't get back to them. This is according to him, that he didn't get back to them when they tried to figure out whether or not he's going to resign as promised. He is going to resign as promised. This is an exclusive story you're only going to hear about here on the Jason Rant Show. So text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. It's the number or tax resolution hotline. I'll send you a link to the story for you to read and share, and we'll talk about it in the big local at 7:30. But first, I want to talk about a Somerville, South Carolina man. He's charged with arson after police said he burned down the Christmas decorations in his neighborhood. His name is Cameron Lewis Bond. He's 29 years old, and he was arrested after receiving a call, after cops received a call one afternoon about a person setting fire to the property of multiple neighbors. Police said Bond lit up a snowman decoration that was in the front yard of a home, and he was then detained for burning Christmas decor at another home when officers arrived. I've been there. I mean, I haven't actually gone through with it, but I've been there in saying, this is a complicated scenario in my book for me. I think it's good. I'm a complex person, Darren. I don't like it when other people are happy. And I don't know if it's because I'm always deeply unhappy and I'm jealous, I'm envious, or if it's that I'm just a bad person. I mean, that's also part of it. I'm also just a
one
bad
or the
person.
Other.
It's either or, and maybe the truth is it's both. Maybe I'm both a bad person, a petty person, and don't like to see other people happy. But there is something about certain decorations that try really, really hard. Almost that they don't really care about the holiday. They just care about showing up the neighbors and showing what they're capable of doing. And it's really having nothing to do with their dedication to the holiday. It has everything to do with the fact that they can afford to put up a whole bunch of cool decorations that move and say things when you like just enough. I don't need a whole, I'm not talking about just general lights on homes. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who go really, really overboard and you're like, okay, Stu, we got it. You're cool. You've got really good day. We got it. Cool. Okay. And then the person is like, oh, hey, did you see my lawn? Like the one who's fishing for a compliment. I've kind of wanted to burn their stuff down. I don't. So don't give me that look. I'm not.
Because they have Christmas spirit?
No, it's not Christmas spirit. That's my point, is I think it's about them showing off. And that's not the Christmas spirit. You can have the Christmas spirit and put up no lights. You can have the Christmas spirit and put up a reasonable amount of lights. And then you can be the guy who wants to go out of his way to show up everybody else in the neighborhood and make you feel really bad about your small amount of decorations.
Maybe he just really likes Christmas.
No, maybe he's just a jerk. And maybe he's the
jerk.
One who's the
problem. No, he's spreading Christmas cheer.
No, but he's not. I don't get Christmas cheer when I see it. I mean, I'm a Jew, so I don't really get Christmas cheer per se, but I mean, I don't think people get a lot of Christmas cheer. You know what's the most insufferable thing in the world? And I don't know if your parents did this at any point during your childhood, like mine did, even though we came from a Jewish family. My mom was always like, let's go for a drive and look at all the decorations.
Yeah, that was great.
It's the worst. It's so boring. You're just driving around. And
absolutely
by the way,
loved it. There was a street in Fir Crest that we would go down all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kirkland does. There's every Ballard, I think, has a little area of I'm sure it's great. By the way, we have a holiday map of all holiday things going up if you want to check out MyNorthwest.com. You've not been to the point where you've wanted to completely destroy an entire home and family.
By the way, this guy in South Carolina looks like he would set fire to Christmas decorations.
He does kind of look like that. Do I?
Yes.
Oh, shut up. Text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason RANTZ Show. Welcome back to the Jason RANTZ Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Yesterday was a pretty big day for Brexit, big in that the vote on the deal was actually delayed. So what does that mean exactly for Brexit, and how is that impacting us here in the United States? Joining us this morning from London is Fox News Radio's Simon Owen. Simon, good morning. What happened yesterday?
Good morning. What happened yesterday is Theresa May cancelled or postponed a vote that was supposed to be taking place today in Parliament. So Brexit revolves around votes. It began with a referendum where the nation went to the polls and opted to leave the European Union. That was 2.5 years ago now. Since then, the government, currently led by Theresa May, has been negotiating how that's going to happen, because you could just walk away from the EU, but there's a general acceptance, I think, even within the fractious British Parliament, that is not the consensus, and so there's some kind of divorce has to be drawn up, and that's what the government's been doing for the past couple of years. And so the plan for Theresa May, she wanted to put this to lawmakers today. She was hoping they would give her approval to go and tie things up, and with Britain due to leave the EU next March, you know, Theresa May could have gone back to Brussels and it would have been fairly straightforward and the timing would have been quite comfortable by all, you know, as far as it seems. Saying that, as the vote drew nearer, it seemed pretty clear that Theresa May was going to be defeated. Mm-hmm. There are lawmakers on all sides of the Brexit question who have a host of complaints about what she's come up with, whether it's a deal that's too soft or too hard and whatever else in between. And so she's called it off. And instead of voting today, Theresa May is not even in the country. She's gone to the Netherlands. She's gone to Germany. She's going to Brussels to try and win some support from fellow European leaders, essentially to try and tweak her proposal in the hope of then going back to Parliament and having another go at getting it confirmed. But as I say, next March is not a million miles away, and the clock is starting to tick now.
So what's that general overarching concern? Because the way that you explain it and the way that I've been reading about it, it shows so many different sides having different issues. It doesn't, I'm not getting the sense of one overarching theme. If she's able to just get done, we'll win over enough people for this deal to pass.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who have all sorts of opinions on Brexit, whether they want it to happen or not. And then if you do want it to happen, how should it happen? Should there be a really close relationship with the EU still, because it's really close geographically and a close trading partner, but therefore you have to take a lot of EU rules? Well, some lawmakers say, actually, no, that's not what people voted for. They want to be shot of the EU, so let's have a clean break, however dramatic that might be overnight when all the cords are cut. But there is one major problem, at least this is what Theresa May says. She said that there is broad support. She said this in Parliament yesterday. She said, while there is broad support for many of the key aspects of the deal, on one issue, there remains widespread and deep concern. And this relates to Northern Ireland and the unusual way in which the UK is made up. It's four different countries: England, Scotland, Wales, and then the province of Northern Ireland. And it's a question of what you do when suddenly the island of Ireland, where there has been massive levels of violence not too many decades ago and a really hard-won peace. What do you do when suddenly an EU border is slapped midway across that island? Because part of the peace agreements on Ireland have been about having basically no border there. The main thing you notice when you drive across that border is that the speed limit signs change from kilometres an hour to miles per hour. That's really about all you notice. And so suddenly if there's going to be a load of customs checks or whatever else you put there, that has people concerned. Now, Theresa May's divorce proposal includes what she sees as a compromise there, where for a certain amount of time, potentially, Northern Ireland would be subject to different rules to the rest of the UK. And that in itself upsets some lawmakers. But the real complaint is that May's proposal doesn't include a time limit. So technically, the EU could end up keeping Britain on the hook, keeping the UK effectively an EU member. And there are a number of lawmakers in London who don't trust Brussels to keep to their word on cutting that agreement. So if that makes sense, I don't mean to get too weedy about it, but it's to do with Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And so May is now shuttling between European cities in the hope that she can get some kind of concession, that Europe, the rest of the EU might say, well, here's what we'll commit to. We will say that this backstop, as it's called, will only be in place for X months or X years or whatever else. That's what she's hoping, we think, to try and straighten out today.
If you're just joining me, Simon Owens on the line from London, trying to explain yesterday's sort of Brexit deal breakdown. Just a couple questions more for you, because I'm seeing these calls, I'm hearing these calls for another vote on Brexit from the people. And I'm obviously that makes little sense in the sense of you haven't even implemented what you originally voted on. How strong is that movement?
Well, I mean, it's got a certain amount of backing from lawmakers, and their argument is that, yeah, I mean, you're quite right. There was a vote on this exact question, do you want to leave the EU, just 2 years ago? And the result was clear, that by 52% to 48%, the country said, yes, we want out. Now, the argument goes that, actually, we've learned a lot more about what Brexit means, and specifically that there are different kinds of Brexit. And so is this one that the Prime Minister has come up with, is this what you want? Put it back to the people. That's what there's a good chunk of lawmakers that say that should happen. There's also a good chunk of lawmakers who say, stop all this messing around, stop all this negotiating with Brussels, and just cut everything overnight. And those are two very dramatically different options. And then there are many others who say they like May's deal, but not enough people to actually get a majority through Parliament. So, you know, whether there is anybody else in the government or elsewhere in Parliament who could come up with something more likely to get a majority than what Theresa May's got, I'm really not sure, because it is divisive and you can describe Brexit in a myriad ways. So whether anybody's got any better plans is up for debate.
Does Theresa May have the political power to stay in power, or are they going to run her out at the end of all of this, or even before it's all done?
Well, I mean, these are really unpredictable times for UK politics, and that, I think, is of interest in the US as, you know, a very close ally. But one of the options is that she could be ousted. She could face a challenge from within her own party, and that could start.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show this morning from the Online Trading Academy studio. That was Simon Owen from Fox News Radio. Simon, thank you for joining me this morning. Meanwhile, GM announced that they're firing a whole bunch of people as they're shuttering down some plants in the U.S., but they're also trying to retain some tax credits on their electrical vehicles, which might be an uphill battle if you listen to the words of the president. Joining us to take us through exactly what's happening is Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso. Jeff, sort of standing in the way of all of this is not just the president, but Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming. Take us through exactly what's going on.
Well, I mean, John Barrasso, Senator Wyoming, he's the chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, introducing legislation back in October to scrap this tax credit for electric vehicles, $7,500, in a move that he says would save about $20 billion over 10 years. I mean, that's real money. You look at Tesla, heavily subsidized company. In fact, if it wasn't for the American taxpayer, that company would be belly up. Yet they charge an average, you know, $80,000-$90,000 for the cars. GM's decision to scrap plants and to fire about 15,000 people has, you know, people outraged, in particular President Donald Trump, who, you know, won over the Rust Belt and Midwest and manufacturing on calls to, you know, revamp the auto industry and revamp manufacturing. And you know, while the company's faced opposition, it's now got its you know, lobbyists. It's loaded with lobbyists that are descending onto D.C. to try and keep this $7,500 tax incentive per vehicle, calling it crucial, even though current law caps the incentive at about $200,000 vehicles, I should say, per manufacturer. So it's a waste of money. That's what most people say. I think that many of us, many Americans, Americans believe that, you know, this whole electric, autonomous type of thing is kind of being forced upon us into a future where we're going to have no choice. But you know, when you start to peel it back, those of us who have gas combustion vehicles, we pay for the gas taxes, yeah, and which funds our roads. Electric vehicles do not have that, and so we'll see. President Trump is not keen on the $7,500 tax credit. You look at the state of Michigan, federal officials that represent the state of Michigan, they're not keen on supporting GM and these tax credits for vehicles that people don't want. You look at the Chevy Volt. It's been scrapped because nobody's buying it. So if there's an argument out there that if you build a vehicle that somebody wants, you won't need a tax incentive to get people to buy it. People will just buy it and make it affordable.
Yeah, I feel like
I feel like
that's been completely lost in all of this. And I love that point of, yeah, I think there's a loud segment of a smaller population that's calling for these cars because they like the environmental aspect to it. And I totally get that. But the fact is, consumers over and over and over again have said virtually no to almost every single electric car. You know, when we're talking about purchasing it in a meaningful way, they're still going to the same types of vehicles.
Well, we should also point out that while if you drive electric, it's going to be very good on the environment for you and for that vehicle because it doesn't consume any gas. But the carbon footprint on that vehicle to manufacture is actually you know, way more dirty, way more heavy in terms of that carbon footprint. It takes a lot to build these things with the batteries and the nickel mining and you know, sending it overseas to get charged. And so those cars are actually a lot more dirty than the cars that we drive.
So what are the prospects of this actually staying in place when you've got the president and a lot of senators on the side of scrapping it?
You know, I don't know. You look at D.C. and what's going on, and the little pork projects that are stuck into bills, and these lobbyists that are descending onto D.C. and I don't know. I don't know what the prospects are. I think that President Trump is a staunch critic of this. I think that he's going to do everything that he can to avoid the taxpayers having to subsidize cars that people don't want, particularly when companies, GM, are closing plants. We'll see. I don't have an answer for you, but I think that there's going to be some serious pushback.
Yeah, and something tells me just the context as to when this is happening and GM, you know, pushing for this at the same time that they're closing plants is not going to bode well in their favor. But we'll find out, of course. Check out FoxNews.com as we continue to follow the story and see how it develops. Jeff Manasseh, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate it.
You bet.
You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. It's an Unbetter tax resolution hotline. We'll send you over a link to my latest blog. Please read it. Please share it. It's about the Ellensburg Republican, Matt Manweller. He rips into the Seattle Times. You're going to want to read his comments and share it with your friends and family. Text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my latest blog. You're not going to want to miss this because State Representative Matt Manweller, who's scheduled to resign in the next 10 days, he rips the Seattle Times, calling them like a prom queen jilted on dance night. Text RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Chris Christie's name is now in the mix for chief of staff, that according to CNN. The problem for the president right now in replacing John Kelly, who's out at the end of the year, they don't have a plan B. They had one plan, which was to go after Nick Ayers, who is currently he's a guy in his mid-30s who's got a family that he wants to spend more time with. And he understands that he can't do that by taking on this position. Currently, he's with the vice president's office as Vice President Pence's chief of staff. He's leaving at the end of the year as well. And this presumption was Nick was going to take this job. He didn't. So now the president and his team are like, oh, we got to figure out a plan B. And so they're going over some of the past names that have been put in the mix. And Chris Christie's name keeps popping up. I don't know if that's a smart move for Chris Christie or for the president, frankly. It just seems a little bit weird to have a former governor as your chief of staff when they weren't always the best of pals, when Chris Christie brings with him a level of a spotlight that, generally speaking, you don't get from chiefs of staff. Now, another name that's been put out there is Mark Meadows. He is a congressman from North Carolina. He's a huge Trump supporter. And he was on with Fox News to talk about it.
Right now, I've got a great job in representing the people of Western North Carolina. I'm going to continue to do that. And yet, at the same time, there needs to be someone to support this president and making sure that we indeed make America great again.
So it sounds like if you were offered the job, you would say yes.
Well, listen, there's a whole lot. You don't answer a question before it's asked, but I can say this, that because it's an honor, certainly I'm favorably inclined to at least have a discussion with the president.
Not a smart move for me on this, because you don't want someone who's this much of a fan of the president to be in that position, because you need someone who's going to be able to dispassionately look at everything and then passionately take a side that you think is best served for the president. If you're such an Uber fan like Mark Meadows, what I think you might end up doing is placating the president whenever you can because you want to please him. And I don't think that that's going to serve the Trump administration. I thought John Kelly was a good, at least according to the reports, was a good choice because he would say, this is probably not the right move. Someone needs to control the president. Someone would need to control any president. This is not even a Trump issue. This is a presidential issue. So I don't know if Mark Meadows is the right person. Now, at MSNBC, there was a maddeningly annoying conversation between two dopes, Stephanie Ruhle and Ollie Velshi, their midday host. The second they show up on the TV, I go as far away from that channel as humanly possible. This morning, I'm on the Speed Channel because that's the furthest one away with live programming. I'm kidding. I'm watching Fox. But they said this list of John Kelly replacements apparently includes six white guys, and that somehow offends them.
I do want to note to you, you and I talk about business all the time. That's a major position, and the six people that they have put out that are shortlisted are all white guys. I cannot think of single public company right now that if they had an open senior position like that or a board seat, you would never, in 2018, see that the shortlist is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 white guys.
Right, even if you're not going to pick somebody else.
Correct.
Usually
correct.
Put them on the list just but, for...
Oh, yeah, you still will just tokenize them. Oh, yeah. He's actually taking a position that they should put a person of color on the list just so they can say they have a person of color on the list. That's Ollie Velshi, folks. That's his position. That's his position, and Stephanie Ruhle, of course, nods like the dope that she is. That's her position as well.
Like that isn't that stunning? That the White House has no problem. Yep, these are our six. If you saw a public company put out that list right now, they would get clobbered.
Oh my God! Now, I mean, the majority of MSNBC people are actually white dudes, but oh my God! You know who I'm not going to talk about? We're definitely not going to talk about Obama, who had a whole bunch of white dudes who were his chiefs of staff. And I guess it's okay because we like Obama and he's black. So I think that kind of covers it. Of course, they ignore under the Trump administration, the black folks, the Latinos, the women who are in positions of power in the cabinet and in his administration. They completely discount that. But they say, hey, we don't want who's best for the job. We just want a bunch of tokens on this list. I can't believe they would actually admit to that, that that is their position. That is shocking to me. That is shocking to me. And this whole notion, this silly notion that there has to be a level of diversity that reflects the population in every single business, in every single job category, I cannot believe that leftists just put, well, actually, no, I take that back. I can believe it because this is all about playing racial politics. This is all about racial identity and identity politics. This is all about symbolism for the sake of symbolism, not because it actually helps anyone, but we just like the appearance of it. That is the Democratic Party. We're not going to help you, but we like the appearance of helping you. We're not going to help put people of color in positions of power so that they can get on this list to begin with. We're just going to throw on some names knowing they're never going to get the job because it gives the appearance that they're being helped. Thanks, Democrats. Cool. Thanks, Stephanie. Oh, my God. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Text RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770.